Trigger warning. The following episode may contain content that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. On April 20th, 1999, the students of Columbine High School expected the day to be like any other Tuesday. They attended their classes, took their tests, and went to lunch like always. Little did they know the horror lurking just outside the school, waiting for the opportunity to strike. This is the story of Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. Dylan Klebold was a gifted student who grew up in an upper middle class home. In his personal journals, he writes about how he had a nice family and friends, but still, something was missing. He wanted to be accepted for who he was. He wanted to be loved by someone. He wrote about wanting to commit suicide on almost every entry in this journal. He was excellent at disguising it under typical teenage angst. His friends and parents never knew. Dylan met Eric Harris in middle school. Eric grew up constantly moving due to his father being in the military. Once his dad decided to retire, they settled down in Columbine, Colorado. Eric expressed difficulty growing up because he was always at the bottom of every social hierarchy at schools because of how often he moved. He was always the new kid. He quickly became friends with Dylan, and the two became inseparable. When they went into high school at Columbine, they were frequently bullied for being the weird kids. The two started to dress in dark clothing and found a love in German metal. In Eric's personal journals, he frequently wrote about this irrational hate for humanity and how he was a god amongst men. He wrote how everyone deserved to die, and his journal entries were full of hate, murder fantasies, and talk about weapons and bombs. Here is a quote from one of the entries. "I know we are going to have followers. We are godlike. We aren't exactly human. We have human bodies, but we have evolved above you fucking human shit. We actually have self-awareness." His rants were deranged, the musings of a true psychopath. The two began to plan for an event that would wipe Columbine High School off the face of the earth. They record their ideas, walk through their weapons collections and their rantings about hate, and they even record their goodbyes just 30 minutes before their actual attack on Columbine High. Most people think that their hate was directed only at Columbine High School, but after researching this case, it seems that they just wanted to have the highest kill count possible, and that the high school was the best place to achieve this. They were inspired by the Oklahoma bombing, and frequently referenced it when they would talk about their plans for Columbine. But they did not want to be copycats. They made that very clear. They said they wanted to do better. They were obsessed because they wanted to one-up the Oklahoma bombing. Eric even writes in his journals that he wondered if people would write books about him. He says that if they do, they better be fucking good. The two boys planned for a year for this attack, and they were aiming for it to happen on April 19th, which was the anniversary of the Oklahoma bombing. They were wanting to remove the memory of the Oklahoma bombing and make that day about them. They had learned how to create homemade bombs and obtained two sawed-off shotguns and two 9mm and had them all hidden in Eric's home. He had to have had about 50-plus bombs hidden in his own bedroom. And on April 19th, the weapon delivery that they were waiting for from a local dealer falls through. They now have to wait until the next day, April 20th. This wasn't the only issue that they run into with their plans. When the day arrives, they wake up and act like any other day, telling their parents goodbye as if they were off to school for a regular learning day. But the boys meet each other to load up their cars with an arsenal. Another friend of Eric's, a boy named Brooks Brown, was in one of his classes that morning. and he noticed that Eric wasn't in class, and this was odd because they had a test that day. Eric was a stickler for his grades, and it wasn't like him to skip. Later that day at lunch period, Brooks goes outside to have a smoke, and he sees Eric pull up, and he walks over to him and begins playfully cursing at him and calling him names for skipping on such an important test. Eric says to him, "It doesn't even matter anymore." He says, "I like you, Brooks. Get out of here. Go home." Brooks gets an odd, uneasy feeling and he knows he should leave. The school is on their lunch period and the cafeteria is full of students at 11:08 a.m. People are eating outside as well because it was such a nice day. Why not? Unaware of the danger already inside their cafeteria. You see, Eric and Dylan had planted two 20-pound propane bombs with timers on them inside the cafeteria. Their plan was not to just shoot up a school because of some bullying issue that they were having. Their plan was to kill the most people possible. The plan was that at 11:17 a.m., the two bombs in the cafeteria would detonate. Dylan and Eric would be at their cars, armed with pipe bombs and guns. The students would run out of the school, and the two boys would shoot and blow up the survivors as they ran for their lives. When first responders would arrive, both boys had bombs inside their cars, booby-trapped to go off if anybody opened the doors. They had also made mention in their plans to create enough bombs that they were going to place them at the bridges of the town and throughout the city to try to get as many people as possible. Thankfully, they were not able to follow through with this plan. So 11:17 a.m. comes around, and Eric and Dylan stood by their cars, waiting for the chaos to ensue. But it never does. The boys decide to say fuck it, since the plan was falling apart, and they just approach the school, armed to the teeth. They begin to open fire at the side of the school where the kids were sitting outside eating lunch, injuring and killing. A teacher inside named Dave Sanders hears the commotion and runs to the cafeteria window to see what's going on. And he witnesses the horror unfolding right outside. He begins to rush the children inside into their classrooms, and he begins locking the doors from the outside so nobody can get in, but the kids can still get out. Eric and Dylan begin to make their way inside. Students are still scrambling, trying to find places to hide. And Eric and Dylan begin to shoot anyone and everyone that crosses their path. Dave Sanders is still in the hall, trying to get as many students to safety as possible. He can hear the gunshots and the pipe bomb explosions getting closer and closer, but continues to find kids worried about their safety and not his own. Eric and Dylan spot him, and he is shot in the chest. They turn down another hall, leaving Dave Sanders to bleed out on the floor. Gathering all the strength he has, he drags himself into a nearby classroom and shuts the door behind him. Another teacher eventually finds him, and they run down the hall to a nearby classroom that's filled with students. And they unlock the door and they go inside, and they frantically ask if anybody knows first aid. Aaron Hansey stands up and says, "I do." The teacher takes Aaron's hand and they race out of the classroom and down the hall, hearing gunshots and pipe bomb explosions as they run. They make it to the classroom where Dave Sanders is wounded and alone. The halls are filling with smoke and fire alarms begin to blare, making it almost impossible to hear each other. Aaron sees Dave lying on the floor in a pool of his own blood. He begins to put pressure on the wound, trying his best to stop the bleeding with the little first aid knowledge he has. Dave is still conscious and talking. He's in pain, but seems fine for the most part. Aaron kept saying, "Paramedics will be here soon. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine, Mr. Sanders." He had this wonderful idea to pull out Dave Sanders' wallet and ask him about the photos inside that were of his children. But it would be hours before anyone makes it to Dave Sanders. Police begin to arrive on the scene, but have been trained to just contain an incident, not to engage. So they set up a perimeter, but no one goes inside to confront the shooters. Eric and Dylan continue down the hall, shooting lockers and throwing bombs. They eventually make it to the library. The library doors are unable to lock, and inside are several students, hiding under tables, fish in a barrel. Dylan walks in and yells, "Everybody stand up. Stop hiding." A teacher is hiding behind a desk on the phone with 911 when Dylan and Eric were entering the library. And in this phone call, you can hear Dylan yell for the people to stand up. It's painful to hear the gunfire and screams in the background that follow. The whole time on this 911 call, you can hear Dylan talking, saying things like woohoo and other inappropriate remarks. But Eric is silent. Silently executing the people he shared a school with. They shoot several of the students in the library, killing most and injuring others. They decide to go back down the hallway to the cafeteria, where Eric tries to shoot the propane bombs, trying to get them to detonate, but he fails. This is their first attempt at dying. They begin walking the halls, not really sure what to do next. Nobody's in the halls, they can't get into the classrooms. They decide to go back to the library. They bust out the windows and they begin to shoot at the police. This is their second attempt at trying to die. They have a short shootout with police, and when it comes to an end, the two contemplate their next move. This hasn't gone as they planned. What are they supposed to do now? The two turn their guns on themselves and pull the trigger. Eric shoots himself with his gun in his mouth and Dylan with the barrel to his temple. Several hours pass before SWAT finally enters the school. Eric and Dylan's reign of terror had been over for hours. The active shooting took place from about 11:19 and ended at about 11:48. The sound of the final shots from Eric and Dylan's guns rang through the halls of the school. Students and teachers are trapped, not sure if the threat is still out there, waiting for someone, anyone, to save them. But no one would come, and several would bleed out and die from their injuries. When SWAT finally enters the school at almost 4 p.m., they discover Eric and Dylan in their gear and t-shirts, one that says Wrath and the other that says Natural Selection, weapons still attached to their bodies. It's easy to blame the parents. How could they not know? But it's much deeper than parents ignoring warning signs. Eric was troubled from the start and was depressed. He was on Zoloft for his struggles, and he had reported to his doctor before that he was having suicidal and homicidal thoughts. But nothing was done. The doctor just took him off Zoloft and put him on a different brand. Eric's father knew Eric was struggling, but he wasn't exactly aware of how far he was going to take things. A disturbing fact is that on the day of the shooting, when Eric's father heard the news of what was happening at Columbine High School, he actually called police and said, "I think my son is the one who's shooting at the school. His name is Eric Harris." Eric has since been diagnosed as a psychopath and able to seem so normal yet so twisted inside. Dylan was a different story. His parents did not, could not believe it. They had to watch the tapes from Eric and Dylan leading up to the attack to finally believe that their son was capable of this. Experts believe that Dylan was suicidal and saw it as a win-win. He would help his friend fulfill his dreams, and then he himself would be able to die. They believe Eric was the leader in all of this and heavily influenced Dylan because of Dylan's desire to die. It's a shame to have to wonder if so many would have died if the police had interfered sooner. The local police always bragged about how they saved so many lives that day, but it was not the police who saved them. It was the kids. The kids were climbing out of windows, running out of the building, giving first aid to teachers, dragging the injured from the hallway into the classrooms and working together to survive. I know the police were just following protocol, and especially back then, they wouldn't have had the abilities that they have now to be able to approach active shooters. It wasn't common. It's easy to say what you would have done differently if you were in the same situation. But would you? This was 1999. School shootings were not common. There was no protocol for active shooters. The police were not trained for something like this. But was it really necessary to wait so long to enter the building? When is following orders more important than lives? Could more have been done? Could more lives have been saved? The following is the names of those who died by the hands of Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold: Cassie Bernal, Steve Kernow, Daniel Mauser, Lauren Townsend, Daniel Rohrbaugh, Corey DePooter, Rachel Scott, Kyle Velasquez, Kelly Fleming, Isaiah Scholes, Dave Sanders, Matt Ketcher, and John Tomlin. Thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, please make sure that you leave us a rating. This really helps our podcast grow and allows us to reach more listeners.